Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ich warte seit Wochen auf diesen Tag und tanz vor Freude über den Asphalt, als wär's ein Rhythmus, als gäb's ein Lied, das mich immer weiter durch die Straßen zieht. Komm dir entgegen.
Hallo und welcome to Gegenpressing, the Bundesliga-Podcast from the Football Grad Network. I'm your host, Manuel Feit, and I'm once again joined by Stefan Biankowski. And Stefan, we chatted yesterday, did our first Twitter ever Twitter space on using the Gegenpressing Twitter channel. I really enjoyed it. It was a very different experience, and especially right after the game, right after the Klassiker. And of course, we're going to recap the Klassiker again today, now that we've actually slept over it. But it was really a really good way to just let off steam post-game reaction, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was great fun. You know, it wasn't perhaps as composed as a podcast, but it seemed like a really cool way to just kind of soak up the real kind of emotions after the game. We had a lot of people tune in, had some people asking questions, giving their thoughts. And it's always fun just kind of chatting to listeners too. So if you do follow us on Twitter, do keep an eye on that. I think we're going to try and do it more often. Can't really make any promises. I did actually have someone DM me asking me if we'd be doing it regularly. I can't say for certain. I don't think I can't make any promises every weekend, but I think it's something we'll try to do whenever we have time at the weekend and something big's happened.
Yeah, I think it's both you and I have jobs, right? That's the thing. Like, we have, like, when on a weekend in particular, and we're busy writing about football and like have match reports and have all sorts of stuff to deal with. So it's like, it's time constraints, because I know that, for example, the Klassiker was doing your shift, right? Mm-hmm. And so like, we had to wait a couple hours to actually do it. And like, sometimes like one of us will do player interviews, or we have like meetings and all that sort of stuff, that, you know, the daily stuff. So it's really hard to say, okay, we're doing this once a week now. it's a hard, I think that's a hard promise to keep. But I really like it. I think it's a really good way to engage to you, the listener. It was really great to hear from some of you guys. And yeah, I think it's something that I think we want to do more. And also, you know what, if you ever want to reach out, I should probably just, you know, open the DMs on the Gegenpressing Twitter account. Just DM us with a question. I'll be happy to read the question on the show and try to answer it if we can. It's not always possible because, you know, we're not all knowing, but if we can, then we will try to answer it. We had some, you know, talking about the game yesterday. Stefan, now that you've slept a night on it, and I know we've seen all the reactions, and there was lots of reactions on Jude Bellingham's comments, Haaland's comments. Watzke has said a few things. Zorc has said a few things. And we want to dive into all of that. But now that you slept a night over it, how do you feel about the game, the refereeing decision, and how are you feeling about Mats Hummels defending now that you had 24 hours to digest it?
I don't think I needed 24 hours to digest Mats Hummels' defending, because it's how I felt about Mats Hummels defending for about the last 12 months or so, maybe. Look, I'll put it this way. I was actually on Sky Sports News this morning, and I was actually on to talk about Ralf Rangnick, but they had a wee extra bit on the end of my interview to talk about Der Klassiker. And the one thing they wanted to talk about was Jude Bellingham's comments. And I think, I mean, we kind of touched on this on the Twitter spaces, but that entire like outburst from him has just stolen all of the oxygen in the room. There's no discussion right now. I mean, I know Karl-Heinz Rummenigge made a dig about Hummels. I think he was maybe in the Sky studio at the time after the game. But, you know, there hasn't been any huge inquest into how to fix Dortmund's defence. There hasn't been any question marks over Marco Rosa as the head coach, which I'm actually quite surprised at. But anyway, you know, there's nothing like that. All we're talking about right now is Jude Bellingham, maybe a bit of Erling Haaland. You know, we were just talking earlier on there about how whether, you know, how much kind of trouble Bellingham could be in and how much legal trouble he could be in. And like one of the top stories on Kicker's website right now is Michael Zorc, who is the Dortmund sporting director, discussing whether, you know, Bellingham would be safe under freedom of expression laws in Germany. This is how ridiculous we're getting over all this. And it's been a huge on goal for Bundesliga and the German FA, because whether or not you want to argue about what Bellingham said was true or whether he should have said it, the Bundesliga put itself in a situation by appointing that referee, who will always have that previous debacle hanging over his shoulders. And, you know, it's a real shame that this is kind of the main thing that everyone's talking about after this game, because it was on its own a fantastic game, ruined by refereeing decisions in my opinion, but still a fantastic game, a good advert for the Bundesliga, because I thought Dortmund had Bayern on the ropes a number of times in that game. But yeah, it's just been absolute mayhem. And then in typical Gladbach fashion, Gladbach have shown up today and said, you know what, we're going to steal some of that limelight. and we're going to make sure we have the worst performance in the Bundesliga this weekend.
We're going to talk about that, because that game is going on. We both have it on our respective screens on the side. It's 6-0 at halftime. And we'll have to talk about another coaching change. And I think this is going to be yet another coaching change on top of the one that we have to talk about. The Dortmund game, I think it's still, so I do this thing after big games. I always have a talk. I always phone my dad in Munich and talk with him about it all. And I came to the conclusion, I was pretty much already there yesterday, and I think I wrote as much in Forbes, that I feel the game was ruined by refereeing decisions. But I don't think Dortmund lost the game because of refereeing decisions. And let me elaborate. While I think that Zweier is an abysmal referee, and he showed it yesterday, and the whole scandal in 2005 aside, and with some soul searching, and I thought about this quote quite some time, I think if you were ever involved in a match fixing scandal in professional football and found guilty of it and suspended as a result, there should be no way back for you to become a referee, but also to be climb up as high in the career ladder as he has. And he's a FIFA referee. This is not only him climbing up all the way to the top within the DFB, but also within UEFA and FIFA. And I don't know what that tells us about refereeing in general, or the state of refereeing in the game, not just in Germany, but period, internationally as well. And that, I think, something that a lot of people have to start thinking about. And I think that's why maybe the Bellingham comments are actually good. And the DFB's reaction is so typical, because it is someone from the DFB that has launched these legal proceedings that I don't think will go anywhere, because all Bellingham said was stated a fact. He didn't say the game was fixed. He said that the referee has been previously under investigation and found guilty of match fixing. Fact. It's a factual information. Manuel Graefe said the same thing on television. And by the way, there was criminal investigations launched against Manuel Graefe, like one of the former best referees in German football as well, for saying something like that on ZDF, for just stating a fact. And I think the DFB's reaction, you know, in German you say, hit dogs bark, right? That's exactly what's going on here. I think the day reaction is very telling. And I think this is where I am with the refereeing. The refereeing was abysmal. It was poor. At the best of it, it was poor. It was poor refereeing because there was no clear line. The Royce foul was a penalty. I still think Hummel's handball was a penalty too. Mm-hmm. I actually think that's an okay decision. But that decision is irrelevant if he previously gives a penalty for what happened to Royce, because that situation doesn't happen if Royce previously gets a penalty. And that sucked out the air out of the game. And if you are a neutral watcher, if you're an American, you see Bayern Munich winning 10 titles in a row, and you see the biggest game in the league being run by a referee in this way, that ruins your product. And I think this is maybe a good wake-up call for people in the DFL and the DFB. And Bellingham, like, I think it's good that he said it, first of all. But I also think Dortmund, where you can't have Mats Hummel running around like a headless chicken for 90 minutes and expect to beat Bayern Munich. You know, that's also true. You know, two things can be true. And this is one of those things that is true. Mats Hummels gifted them 2.5 goals. That's the bottom line. And so, like, you can't say, like, it's great for Dortmund to have this distraction, but the truth is, I think at best they would have deserved a draw, Stefan.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, and this is kind of the main issue, and this is something that we have to be careful with. And I think this is something that Dortmund have to be careful with going forward. They can't just kind of let this kind of media hurricane blow through town and then just get on with the rest of the league. They have to kind of take stock of what actually happened in this game, because leading up to it, they had the advantage. Mm-hmm. Bayern were missing Joshua Kimmich. They were missing Leon Goretzka, wasn't deemed fit. He did start, but he certainly wasn't 100%. You know, there's question marks over where Serge Gnabry would be able to play. That back line was in all sorts of trouble. Dortmund had Bayern exactly where they wanted them. They could not have asked for a better list of circumstances. And not to mention the fact that, miraculously, Marco Rosa had a number of key players bounce back from injury. Gallero, Bellingham bounced back from an injury. Erling Haaland, 2 or 3 weeks earlier than planned. You know, the stars really aligned for Dortmund in this game. And again, the whole thing falls apart because of that defense. Mm. At one point, I think I tweeted this as well. At one point, Akanji passed the ball to, I don't even know who it was on the right. It might have been Brandt. And he went for the overlap run. He just kept running down the wing. And, yeah, you know, if I was Marco Rosa, I'd be pulling my hair out at that point. This is a team that have struggled to defend at all this season. We're talking every single week here. There's some calamity. And in their Klassiker, in against Bayern Munich, you've got your centre-back making overlapping runs on the right wing. What is going on here? I mean, obviously, Akanji is not really at fault for much of what happened in that game, but it was such a good example of just like, there's something going on there. There's just a lack of training, or there's a lack of instructions overall, but also, you know, we're obviously watching a very quick demise of Mats Hummels here. We've talked on the podcast in the last couple of weeks about whether he might be able to bounce back after the international, not the international break, the winter break. If he's able to kind of regain his fitness, he might be able to negate, you know, obviously the lack of pace that he has in the game. He may be able to overcome some injury, some error proneness in his game. So we'll have to wait and see what happens with that. But, you know, I think it's important that we do talk about Bellingham. I think it's important that we do talk about the referee and those refereeing decisions. But I totally agree with you. Let's not sit here and pretend that Dortmund were robbed and were outstanding throughout that game, because they shot themselves in the foot at least twice.
And it's actually more often, maybe, they just got away with a few.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not as if these were issues that just sprung up out of thin air in this game. These are issues that have dogged this team throughout the whole season. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting that Marco Rose has managed, and this side have managed to just about get through on it. But the thing as well, like, if you want to kind of pull back from Dortmund in general as well, it's made my final point on this, but obviously when you take into account how terrible they've been in the Champions League, the one kind of good thing Rose has had going for him, and this Dortmund team in general have had going for him this season, is that they've managed to cling on in games in the Bundesliga. And if that suddenly starts to fall apart, which often happens in games, whenever Bayern do come up against a rival and they do end up beating them and it's a hugely ferocious 90 minutes of football, the other team do tend to look jaded for the next two or three games. And if Dortmund do go on and stumble in these next two or three games before the winter break, I think things could get nasty really quickly there, because this kind of this league campaign and their form in the league was kind of the last thing. Not the last thing. There's obviously still the Pokal, unless I'm mistaken. You know, this was the main thing that was kind of defending them against that atrocious record in Europe. And if that starts to fall apart, if they don't continue winning, I think things could get really nasty really quickly over the winter break.
You know, what's kind of been rescuing them quite a bit, and is Kobel. Such yeah. a great signing. It's probably one of the best signings that they've made in a long time, because where would they be without him? And I counted three big errors. No, actually four big errors by Mats Hummels, because I do think that he makes a meal out of that handball. You can argue whether you should give it or not, but he gets it's telling that it's him, right? There was a situation where he tried to chest the ball. I think it was to Guerrero, and it ends up with Müller, and it ends into a counterattack and almost another Bayern goal, right? And this was a 2-1. There was a situation, and I don't want to just hammer here on Hummels, because Emre Can also, when Kobel played a short ball from back, Emre Can opted to play it across the pitch, and it almost ended up for Kingsley Coman to score. So there was at least two, just out of top of my head, two additional scenes where Bayern should have scored from defensive errors. That's on top of the three that Dortmund did give away. So, you know, if that amount of errors, if Bayern Munich are in top form and they're not, that's 5-6 goals. And you get the sort of result that Dortmund got against Ajax in that game in Amsterdam. And I think that is something that they need to look at. I think for Dortmund, honestly, the until the winter break, they just need to get results. Doesn't matter how. I think that's just a priority for this club at the moment, to just get results. Keep the gap to form. And I think Bayern will actually stumble before the winter break. You heard it here first. And maybe to 1 point, that gap could point narrow again to 1 point. And then they need to sit down over the winter. And it's going to be a longer winter break in Germany, right? And there needs to be work done. And I think I'm still, actually, the more I watch Hummels, the more I think it's a form and fitness issue. Because certain things that he does, he's too late. His decision-making isn't quite there. That's a player struggling fitness-wise, right? Mm. So, and that's when they make mistakes. And I think that is something, I think they need to have a hard sit down with him and say, we need to work on your form. And additionally, we will need to bring someone in to replace you in the medium term.
Yeah, I think you make a really good point about Dortmund having to really just make sure they crack on in the league this season or for the rest of the year, because... Yeah. There are positives they can take from this game. There are positives, the fact that they know how to really hurt Dortmund. They know how to hurt Dortmund, of course, because
they do all the time, yes.
I mean, no one knows how to hurt Dortmund quite like Mats Hummels right now. But they know how to hurt Bayern. They have the players to hurt Bayern. You know, Bellingham and Haaland's comments after the game took away from the fact that both of them walked through this game. I thought Marco Reus was good. I thought Julian Brandt possibly had his best game in years. And obviously going into like the next Der Klassiker or whatever you want to call it, you know, in the second half of the season, if Dortmund can get a defence sorted, they can take a lot of confidence from this game, saying, look, if we can just defend, we've got the guys who can cause problems. We're in for a chance here. So as long as they keep within arm's distance of Bayern going forward, they can still hurt them in one-on-one games.
And I think that's it. That's where they are at right now. They have their attack is sorted. There's no problems for them scoring goals. Marco Reus, even in the absence of Haaland, has carried this team. And you're going to get Gio Reyna back at some point too. Don't forget that, right? And Thorgan Hazard is going to be back. And, you know, Malen is looking increasingly better. Haaland, if he stays fit, like, that's not an issue here. That's absolutely not the issue here. Like, they have to work on that defense. And I don't know who you bring in at this stage to sort that. I don't think Emre Can is the solution. I think Mats Hummels needs a backup. Akanji needs a backup. You probably need someone actually to make one of those two the backup, to be quite frank. And I think this is probably the number one list on the shopping list, if there is one for the winter, is to bring in a proper defender.
Hmm.
Just someone who can defend. Like, literally anyone. Anyone who can, like, walk with two legs and can defend. Will do. that's my conclusion from this game, and I stick with it. I think that there is going to be so much talk for the weeks to come about the refereeing, and I actually think there needs to be a long, hard look at refereeing decisions and who referees in German football.
Hmm.
Like, the fact that the Germany's best referee is currently in a TV studio because of an arbitrary age rule, right?
Mm-hmm.
Says everything you need to know about the state of German refereeing. Like, Manuel Gräfer shouldn't be in ZDF slamming Zweier. Mm-hmm. He should be on the field refereeing those games.
Mm-hmm.
That's that's what I think. You know, there's a couple of other referees that are excellent, who I think are more qualified. I think Aitken is from Munich, so he doesn't qualify. Wouldn't have qualified for this game, right? But he's, for example, a guy who I highly rate. And yeah, you know, and that's one of those things. And I think the DFB needs to take, before going after an 18-year-old for saying the truth, they should maybe look in the mirror and say, like, why is an 18-year-old who has the attention of all of the English-speaking media on him saying something like that? That is so very damaging to our product. Yes, but it's damaging to the product because of something that we've decided a long time ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Talking about damaging to the product, Red Bull have to find a new head coach.
They do.
Did you like that segue?
I did like that segue. It's a good time because we think we spent 20 minutes on the Klassiker. That's probably enough.
We could have spent this whole episode on this podcast, and we almost did.
When we would have, if Jesse was still in charge, Jesse Marsh, and he's not. I think the writing was on the wall. It has been for a while. I spoke about it last week, right, on this show, Stefan, and the source that I got it from is very good. It's a very good source, obviously, because it turned out to be true. And I was told with great conviction that if he doesn't win every game in the league, he's done. And the first hurdle he fell, and Leipzig acted. And I think they had to. Point average of 1.32 points per game in the Bundesliga. That's the lowest in RB Leipzig history. It's the first time in RB Leipzig history that they are on a double-digit spot in the Bundesliga, you know, outside of the top 10. The way they've been playing, it just hasn't worked. It hasn't worked at all. And, you know, there's a lot of talk, especially in American media. It's like, oh, they lost their best defender. And, you know, like Bayern Munich stole Sabitzer. It's like, Sabitzer has a shadow of himself and was for most of last year as well. Mm. Upamecano, talking about defensive issues, we didn't even touch on Bayern, but they had some as well.
Mm.
And Leipzig spent I think close to 200 million euros in new players, mm-hmm. including getting two of the best talented defenders in the world, in Gvardiol and Simakan, who haven't been integrated at all. Mm-hmm. They signed Andre Silva, a striker who usually would go abroad after the year that he had with Frankfurt, and he hasn't been clicking at all. Mm-hmm. You know, and you look at the guys, Szoboszlai, Olmo, all those players, like the chemistry isn't there.
Yeah.
It's not at all. And yeah, you can say they lost Upamecano and Nagelsmann, but that squad
exactly
is a top two squad. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think when you, and that's kind of the main thing that's kind of, I was trying to think of like ways to just kind of illustrate how poor Leipzig have been this season. And obviously you can just look at the table and that explains it itself. But if you just kind of look through the list of players and how much they've contributed in the league so far, I think it really does paint a terrible picture of how Marsh has just struggled to get anything out of these players. Like, for example, Andre Silva, 6 goals and assists in 14 games. Szoboszlai, 7 in 13. Poulsen, 5 in 10. Forsberg, 4 in 14. Brobe hasn't even got going. Danny Olmo hasn't even got going. I mean, okay, sure, Olmo's maybe been injured. There's talk of him already wanting to push for a move because a lot of discussions about maybe Barcelona wanting him. I've no idea how they afford him, but apparently he's not too happy. You know, and that's before we even get talking about the defence, which has just been a shambles as well. And that's not just because Upamecano has left. It's not because Konate's left, who, you know, obviously played very little last season anyway. So it seems pretty straightforward to me. Marsh came in, he wasn't able to get these players doing what he wanted them to do, and he's been, technical term is they agreed to mutually terminate his contract, but you know, he lost his job, and you know, I think he'll have to work really hard to kind of rebuild his reputation in the Bundesliga after this, because I think the really most damaging thing here is that he was tasked with replacing a superstar head coach in Julian Nagelsmann, who, if I'm not mistaken, he's literally the most expensive head coach in the history of European football when Bayern signed him this year. And these players just did not do what he wanted them to do. I really don't think there's any excuse in terms of the players he had available to him. The only one that you could maybe argue who's actually done quite well is obviously Nkunku, who's having a great season. But whether that's just because Nkunku is fantastic in general and has just kind of got on with it himself, and he's obviously at times going to be quite an individual player, so he's probably quite adaptable regardless of how the team's playing itself. So, you know, we last week, I think it was, or maybe the week before, we talked about this and the kind of run-up to him getting sacked. And my main question mark is whether, you know, Leipzig go back to that Red Bull Academy and scoop up the next Jesse Marsh and hope that he works, or do they go out and get someone else? I have a sneaky suspicion Tedesco might be in the conversation. That's just my hunch from speaking to some people, which would be interesting. I don't know. Maybe he still has a decent record in German football. So it'd be interesting to see if he could maybe attempt him. Roger Schmidt's obviously one as well. I would really like them to try and just go out and get like a Ten Hag. I'm not even sure if they, I'm really not sure if they can, but I really think they, you know, they're a club with means. They've spent more money than anyone else in German football in the last 5 years, except Bayern Munich. I know they kind of pride themselves on buying youthful players who are quite cheap and then they sell them on, fair enough, but they have money. They have the money to buy and pay the best managers in the world.
Yeah.
And if Leipzig are serious about this, and I think they are serious. I mean, I know everyone says, you know, you can criticize them all you want for being, you know, a faceless organization that just exists to sell Red Bull cans. But when you look at Red Bull's other sporting organizations around the world of sport, in particular the F1 team, that's not an organization that's just there to make up the numbers. I don't think RB Leipzig are there to make up the numbers.
No.
I think they are serious about winning things. So I think they now have to really put their money where their mouth is and go out and get a real proper head coach with credentials to really scare Dortmund and Bayern, because if they're just going to scoop up another Salzburg head coach, then he might do well, but is he actually going to take them to the next level, or is he just going to spend the next 2 years taking them to where Julian Nagelsmann might have had them, you know? I think something drastic has to happen here if they do want to make a few jumps up the ladder.
Erik ten Hag would be interesting because they have kind of moved away, and Oliver Mintzenlaff kind of spoke about that today, right? And that they've kind of moved away from the traditional Red Bull football that they play in Salzburg. And it's gotten under Nagelsmann, it's a lot more possession-based. There's a bit of a marriage now between the possession-based football and the counter-pressing that they play in Leipzig, or traditionally played in the Red Bull system. And it was one of the biggest struggles, I think, for Marsch to almost like try to take the squad a step back from what they were used to and, you know, reteach them these skills that obviously this team no longer required, because they're now the best team 90% of the time when they play a match. They're the better team on the field based on talent. So you don't need to play deep and counter-pressing football. You need to have the ball. And Nagelsmann had him there last year. And I think that's maybe when you look at what they're going to do next, Erik ten Hag would be a logical, you know, maybe previously not so much, because it's a bit of a different style. But now you could say, like, yeah, that actually would make sense. And I can see them go, okay, like, fine, let's spend 10 million euros on the head coach, whatever. I can see them do that. And it also lines up with another name that has been kind of out of left field. And that's why I hope it's true, because we kind of were jokingly saying on last week's show, oh, we hope they don't just recycle a Bundesliga head coach, because that's A, boring, also not very innovative, and I don't think it's actually going to give them success, which is why I have my doubts about Tedesco, although it wouldn't shock me if they do that. Maybe as an interim, until they can get the guy that they actually want. But Ruben Amorim from Sporting has been floating around pretty seriously, very seriously. And that's a huge out of, you know, nowhere name. I'm not a huge expert in Portuguese football. I have a friend who's a huge expert in Portuguese football, who, if this happens, is going to come on the show and tell us all about Amorim. But I have been able to talk to him. And I've seen, of course, what he's done in the Champions League, you know, Sporting qualifying for the next round in what seems like forever, for the first time in like what seems like forever. He's done a very good job there. He's very young, and it's just such a different cultural approach. And so I just love it because of that. And I think that'd be interesting. But yeah, Tedesco, you know, Stefan, I don't know how you feel about that, but that would be the sort of appointment where they say, yeah, until the end of the year, until we can actually get a big name. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the interesting thing as well, and I was having this discussion with someone actually on Twitter when this is actually off the back of the Ballon d'Or discussion and how, you know, Messi winning it kind of shows how people feel about German football.
Yeah.
No idea how I got onto this topic, but we're actually talking about German football's reputation with head coaches. And I don't know, I feel like if you actually look at the current crop of head coaches in the Bundesliga right now, I don't actually think it's that impressive. I've got to be honest with you. I think there are a lot of decent ones. There are some who really could go on to become some great coaches. Maybe Bo Svensson's the one that stands out to me there. Marco Rosa might go on to be a great success at Dortmund. But if the Bundesliga does have a reputation for being this kind of melting pot where people... where the head coach of tomorrow are developed, and I can understand why, obviously, because of who has come and gone, but I don't think that's the case right now. I really don't think your Adi Hütters, your Glasners, you know, whoever else, a whole list of them. I'm just not convinced that these guys are going to become the next Jurgen Klopps and Thomas Tuchels, or Julian Nagelsmanns at that rate as well. So. You know, and that obviously makes things tricky for RB Leipzig, because if they were to go down a Bayern or Dortmund route and just basically scoop up a Dortmund, scoop up a Gladbach or Frankfurt or whoever else head coach is doing quite well, it's actually quite hard to point the finger at any head coach in the Bundesliga right now who's doing well and is on the up and is a young guy who can only get better and better. Unless maybe they do go for Svensson, but we're talking about a guy there who's only, what, 1 year, 2 years record in the German football right now at a top level as a head coach. So if I was in charge of RB Leipzig and I had all the money in the world, I would go get someone like Valverde. I just know he's got absolutely nothing to do with German football, and maybe it's a terrible idea, but you know, I'm still kind of shocked that no one's kind of picked him up after he left. He was kind of unceremoniously chucked out of Barcelona in the midst of winning their third consecutive league title. He was linked with Man United. I thought that would have been an incredibly smart move from Man United, which is why it didn't happen. And it'll be interesting to see if German football could entice him, because I think he's a great coach. And I just don't buy this nonsense that you have to be a German-speaking German football fan to run a Bundesliga club these days.
Someone needs to break that rule, you know, of saying you need a German-speaking coach in order to be successful. And I think that idiotic rule is kind of set by Bayern Munich, because they tried with foreign coaches. First time they did it with a big name foreign coach was, of course, Trapattoni in 94-95, who then after 1 year left and was replaced by Otto Rehhagel, only to then actually go back to Italy to learn German and come back and actually be quite successful, right? And it actually left a pretty big footprint on German football, something that a lot of people underestimate. So that was the first time they tried it, but all the way back to 94-95, there is this idea that you have to speak German in order to be successful in German football. And 94-95 was a very different time than it is today. I mean, you speak to your average Bundesliga player now, and most of them speak English.
And the rest of them speak French or Spanish.
Or Spanish or Portuguese or you name it, right? And like these dressing rooms are very multicultural. And so this idea, I think, it goes back to that. And then, of course, Bayern tried it again with Pep Guardiola. And I think Pep Guardiola was successful at Bayern Munich. He was not as successful as Jupp Heynckes. But that's hard. It's really hard to be successful as Jupp Heynckes was, right? It's a tough act to follow. And, of course, Flick also did it with the triple. But, you know, you get my point. And so then Carlo Ancelotti came in and he didn't speak German well either. But Carlo Ancelotti didn't fail at Bayern Munich because he didn't speak German. It was a lot of other things that, you know, ended up him being a failure. The same reasons why he stumbled at every other club since then, excluding Real Madrid, which I think is just run very differently, which, you know, is why Zidane, I think, was successful at Real and probably wouldn't be successful anywhere else. So, you know, you get my point. So I think Bayern Munich kind of set a trend that you have to be having a German-speaking coach in order to be successful. So all these other Bundesliga teams have gone and gotten all these German-speaking coaches from close by, Austria and Switzerland, and sometimes the Netherlands. And totally forgetting that when I was a kid growing up, a lot of our head coaches in German football were actually from former Yugoslavia. And that's where, in the 90s, a lot of the football trend was actually established. The way we played German football was actually often set by coaches from what is now former Yugoslavia, right? Mm. And they didn't speak German. Like, are you kidding me? Anyone who's ever listened to an interview with Stepanovic or Ristic and all these guys, like, their German was abysmal and it worked. Like, even my dad, when he grew up in the 70s and 80s, there was a lot of Eastern European head coaches in German football and it worked. It was fine. Mm. And I almost want one of the big clubs to say, this is nonsense. Let's break it. Let's break that rule and bring in a foreigner, because the Premier League did it. They brought in all these foreign coaches and it's reset. It's revolutionized coaching in that league. And yeah. I think German coaches are some of the best in the world. And there's a reason why all the top, like some of the biggest, or three out of the four top teams in England are coached by Germans now, right? But I think there needs to be a culture change. Bring in someone like Amorim. Try it. Or Valverde, sure. I would love that, Stefan, because I think it would actually bring in something new, something that German football can learn from. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there's a lot that the Premier League does wrong, and I think there's a lot that the Premier League does that the Bundesliga should stay away from. But one thing it does very well is it spends the money it has getting the best people in the world to do the job. Mm-hmm. And the Premier League hasn't become the best league in the world, or the most competitive league, or whatever you want, not the hardest league, whatever you want to call it, by signing the best players in the world. Those players stayed at Barcelona, they stayed at Real Madrid, they stayed at PSG. They signed the best managers in the world, and that's how they've gone on to win Champions Leagues. That's how they've gone on to create these huge clubs with remarkable talent and type of football that only Bayern Munich can really rival from Germany. Manchester City don't really have any of the best players in the world. They might have six or seven of the best 20 or 30, so don't get me wrong, and they obviously spend a huge amount of money, but same with Chelsea, same with Liverpool. In fact, Liverpool have very few of the most expensive players in the world, but they have Jurgen Klopp. And while the Bundesliga may never be able to compete with the Premier League for those managers, it can certainly be more proactive in scouting out those managers. If the league does, and it does a good job of scouting players, I don't understand why it turns its nose up at foreign coaches so often, because it would help a lot of the clubs in this league. And RB Leipzig are the first example of this, but maybe Borussia Mönchengladbach might be the next one.
I was hoping you would make that transition. Yeah. You know who's a really good manager? Christian Streich.
I was going to say, like, he kind of contradicts everything we've just said in the last 10 minutes.
He's a very good manager. And he's also very, very nice. You know why he's nice? We're recording this Sunday afternoon, your time. And while we're recording this, both of us have the Gladbach-Freiburg game on. It was 6-0 at halftime. First of all, Freiburg, fantastic. They're a top four club this year, and I think there's a good chance that they might end up there because of everyone around them and what they're doing. But some of the players that they have as well, Schlotterbeck. Speaking of proper defenders, Stefan, there's one. Mm-hmm. Schade has been a revelation. He's now the fastest player in the league, if I'm not mistaken. Mm. Just such a fantastic talent. And this is in a country who apparently doesn't have talents anymore. So that's absolute nonsense. Streich has been just amazing. But I think just like Zidane, Ancelotti only would ever work at Real Madrid, I think he would only work in Freiburg as well. So like, why would he leave? He can basically rebuild this team in his whatever he wants to do in his fashion, and he can bike to work and all that sort of stuff. I would love to see him at a different club. I don't think it's ever going to happen. So he's an excellent coach, and he's done excellent work for close to a decade now. Yeah, just amazing. But Adi Hütter, I think he's being spared in the second half by Freiburg because Christian Streich is also a really nice guy, and he's probably said to his players, look, 6-0 is enough. And he hacked some of these guys, some of the Gladbach players at halftime, almost apologetically. Stefan, this is the kind of guy he is. So I think this would have probably been double digits by now if Freiburg would have actually played full throttle. And at times they do. They break forward and they look great. It's just amazing football. In fact, they might just score their 17 and all. Let's see. Maybe, maybe not. But Hütter must be done now, right?
Yeah.
No way he survives this.
Yeah, and it's kind of a similar thing to Jesse Marsch at RB Leipzig, where you've got a decent squad there and he just hasn't seemed to get it working. I do partially feel kind of sorry for Hütter in the sense, and this might keep his job. So if he hasn't been sacked by the time you listen to this, you know, I'm the smart one here. I'm only saying that because there are kind of mitigating circumstances for Gladbach this season, in the sense that, you know, Marcus Thuram has hardly got going this season because of a knee injury. Florian Neuhaus has only started maybe like five or six games in the Bundesliga. But there's all sorts of stuff going on with this team which really makes it a concern. I mean, you've got the whole thing with Dennis Zakaria, whose contract's up, same with Matthias Ginter. You know, sporting directors come out and said, you know, they basically can't offer them the kind of contracts they should get because the club have struggled from coronavirus so much. So the kind of worrying thing is, and this is maybe what I said about Marsch a couple of weeks ago, well, maybe it's probably very different from Leipzig because Leipzig have so much depth, but this Gladbach team needs a lot of work. And it looks like of the maybe four or five top players it's got, you're probably looking at least two or three of them leaving in the summer, if not sooner. And, you know, and obviously Gladbach are a very compassionate club. They're a very well-run club. They're not a club that jump into decisions. So there's a good chance that they'll probably take all of that into account. But based on the fact of, you know, how they got absolutely horsed in the derby last weekend and then this result against Freiburg here, it seems to suggest something deeper. This squad just are not working. I think it's almost quite, you know, it's quite interesting that the best results have actually come against Bayern Munich this season. And the reason I think that's the case is because, you know, and these things often happen when teams are having really bad seasons and they put in a great performance against the Giants. It's usually got very little to do with the head coach. These players usually can get themselves up for these games because they're playing against Bayern Munich. They want to give them a bloody nose. They want to prove themselves against the best. And if you take those results out of it, then it's been a really poor season for Gladbach. But it really comes down to what the club think, where this team should be and where this team's actually going. Because if they do lose Zachariah, if they do lose Ginter, if Neuhaus has decided that he wants to leave and he's not really putting in a shift this season and he's determined to move to Liverpool or Bayern or whatever else in summer, you do wonder if the club's sitting there thinking, well, what would be the point in sacking Adi Hütter and bringing someone else in? And on day one, we have to drop all these problems on his desk. So I do wonder if Gladbach will just kind of hold on to the winter break and maybe just try and recoup. But again, I wouldn't be surprised if by the time everyone's listening to this podcast, Hütter's gone.
It'd be hard for, I can't imagine 10 goals in two games, and it should be more in this game. I think Freiburg are just being nice. You know, there's several attacks where they kind of, you know, jumped on the, and they pulled the handbrake and said like, no, you know, this is the sort of game that you can lose double digits. And as good as Freiburg have been, hey, I have lots of time for Freiburg. It's just a fantastic, best, probably with the, considering the resources that they have, probably the best run team in Germany, best run club in Germany for sure. But yeah, this is unacceptable. And I wonder too, you know, Hütter had such a great situation in Frankfurt, and to leave that in the fashion that he did, costing Frankfurt the Champions League spot last year because of this decision that he made when he made it. Yeah, I mean, you look at the faces and the reaction. It seems like no one, you know, it's everyone just kind of seems lost, and I don't know if he can survive this, Stefan. Not sure.
We'll just have to find out, I suppose, won't we? And if you listen to this right now, I guess you'll know more than we will. But it just goes to show the kind of nature of the Bundesliga this season. I kind of made a remark before we started recording that, you know, of that kind of hilarious kind of managerial carousel round merry-go-round during the summer, the only ones that are working out right now are Marco Rosa. To an extent,
yeah.
I'm sure a lot of Dortmund fans aren't exactly over the moon about his.
Even Glasner is kind of like a maybe.
Sorry?
Glasner is a maybe?
Yeah, a maybe. Well, this is the thing. I kind of suggested that Glasner could be in trouble, and I've just, my mentions are now just full of Frankfurt fans furious at me. So they seem to be fine with how he's doing. But a lot of it's not really working out right now. And that could just be an indication of wider trends in the Bundesliga, where there's just a huge amount of instability. And it seems there's no one consistent team. Especially in that kind of mid-table part of the table.
You know, and this is maybe my final point, you know who's kind of really worked out as a manager? And we've kind of not really talked about them at all, and they have sneakily snuck themselves up into fifth in the table. Sebastian Hoeneß,
yeah,
Hoffenheim.
Do you know, I actually watched that game and we haven't even spoke about it, but...
You know, there's so much going on, it's like... But yeah, I know you're right, but Sebastian Hoeneß.
Yep, Leverkusen.
Quietly.
Leverkusen as well.
Yeah, Leverkusen was probably the team that laughed the most about the Klassiker because still 7 points to the very top, but they were probably hoping for a draw in that game because, you know, we all thought that after the Bayern result, they would collapse, and they briefly did, which is why it's 7 points now. But they are certainly a top three team in this league. What they did to Fürth was just, it was filthy dirty. That 7-1 victory, 4 goals by Schick, have to mention that. Yeah, Sione has worked out really well. And so Hoeneß and Sione, that's two changes, I think, that, like, oh, well, Hoeneß is now 2 years ago, so that doesn't really count. But you know what I mean, right? Like, that's a coach who's on the up. And, you know, clubs might be sniffing around. Svensson is another one. Have a lot of time for him. And I wouldn't be surprised if someone comes for him.
It'd be interesting to see what the league table looks like from last January with Svensson at Mainz and just how well they've done since then. If you know what I mean, like an overall league table.
I think they're in the top four.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that would make sense, wouldn't it?
We'll have to look that up. We'll come back to you about that. I think we're out of time. Yeah. Stefan,
we'll save this for the next Twitter space.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, there's so much going on. I think this winter is actually going to be really fascinating in terms of what a lot of these clubs are going to do. And despite the result, and I know a lot of people are resignating already, I don't think the title race is done either.
No.
I wouldn't be shocked if we go into the winter with there just being 1 point between the two teams.
I wouldn't disagree with you.
That's my Christmas prediction right there. But we'll see if I'm right. You guys can come all at me if I'm wrong. I can handle it. All right, man. I think that's it. Make it a wrap. We'll be back next week to discuss even more. And I think there's lots of interesting stuff happening. So what we'll try to do, if there's something major happens, we'll try to do a space. And until next week, everyone. Auf Wiedersehen.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.